Welcome to the Black College Sports and Education Foundation Weekly Show, where we equip students, athletes, their families, and supporters with vital tools and information that will impact their decisions on educational opportunities and careers. Tune in every Thursday night at 7 Eastern Standard Time as we host prominent guests from a variety of backgrounds, such as education, sports, medicine, and the corporate world. Remember, the Black College Sports and Education Foundation is your one-stop resource center. Now, here's your host, Executive Director, Ed J. Hayes.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Black College Sports and Education Foundation podcast series. I'm your host today, Ed J. Hayes, the Executive Director, and I want to thank you for tuning in. The foundation was initially started to provide a gateway to unlimited access to information about historically Black colleges and universities. Since that time, we have developed a project that addresses the concerns that many families, their students, and others have about the rapidly changing times around the educational opportunities that they face today. We'll open this forum up to discussions that you, the audience, can voice your opinion and share experiences and engage in identifying and finding solutions to some issues that are important to us all. Our guest tonight is Ken Free Sr., a highly respected member of the HBCU community. Among his many firsts, he was the first full-time commissioner of the Mideast Athletic Conference back in 1978. He is the founder of the Freedom Bowl Football Classic, the first African-American member of the NCAA Division I Basketball Committee, and later named to the NCAA Executive Committee. He's also an ex-commissioner of the EIAC, which is the Eastern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, and a former Negro League baseball player. And he later became an NCAA referee. Ken served many years in the North Carolina Parks and Recreation Department, and as a graduate of NCAA&T University, he still resides in Greensboro. So I'd like to introduce Ken Free Sr. to those who are not familiar with the gentleman, and we'll let him tell you a little bit more about himself. Hi, Ken. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Ed. It's good to talk to you. Ain't much to say about me other than I'm a believer of HBCUs, had the privilege of working with some of them, and of course I'm concerned about their well-being now, and of course all the students that are looking for college educations and sports scholarships. So, good to be with you.
Thanks, Ken. You know, we've had many conversations about some of these issues that surrounding our HBCUs today, especially since we know from the beginning of time they've faced the same challenges we are looking at today, which is growing and sustaining themselves. But despite this, there have been periods when those Black colleges found ways to overcome some really adverse situations such as racism, exclusion, and as of today, a lot of folks are talking about their demise, which is disturbing due to the fact that these are education institutions that really was the backbone and the foundation for a lot of us African-Americans who began their educational journey. Can you share some of your experiences as commissioner, even from your days as a student, and how you see things have evolved in the community today?
You know, it's interesting because it seems that the leadership at the HBCUs now can't make up their mind who they want to lead them. Finding leadership is not easy as it was when I was in school. Everybody was pointed in the right direction. Now everybody seems to be concerned about who's doing what, who's leading who, and that type of thing. And it bothers me a little bit because when you bring ideas and things to HBCUs, they have to be amenable. And I think that the main issues I've had is communication. It seems that they lock themselves in to the walls of the university, and information is hard to get in and information is hard to get out. And that's why I feel that we're destined for trouble in these days in survival, because it seems as though success is going to fly over and drop on those campuses rather than them having a little more external public relations. And the idea that you can run an institution by so-called fundraising, when I was going to school, of course, fundraising was begging. And begging might have worked back in the day, but now you have to be competitive. And I think that we're going to have to start bringing in people that know how to build negotiation. Most of the corporations and stuff that want to help HBCUs, particularly sports programs, when I was in sports, when I would go to ask for financial assistance, you have to be more able to negotiate rather than to ask for money. Most corporations would ask me, what's in it for me? And if you don't have something to offer, they don't participate. And when you're talking about sponsorships, you've got to have something to offer donors. And most of these HBCUs have a lot to offer if they're willing to put it in a sponsorship package. And there's some things that seems like HBCUs don't want to turn loose to the public. And therefore, we are losing students. A lot of our problems is not always money, it's retention. Since integration, of course, we have to compete for students, and particularly athletes, and that's basically my area. And a lot of times we need to offer programs that fit the community and the community needs. But basically what I'm saying is that we have, and I'm proud of the program that you and the foundation, that's the reason I joined, is that you're trying to get into these institutions to help them weather the storm that's coming down now, particularly on private schools. We have to make some erratic changes. You know, we got to look at the tuition. We have to look at more programs that are dealing with trade and those type of things. And, of course, athletically, we have to learn to publicize our programs just a little more to give the kids some similar recognition externally as the other schools that they seem to be going to.
I see. Well, you brought up a very interesting point about the options that are now being available, even more so, especially with the attention given to a lack of qualified people in the workforce that are coming from areas that are trying to bring in more commerce, but they find that they're really lagging in being able to supply those folks who are qualified to take some of these jobs. And, of course, we speak about the one situation that we know of where they had to bring in foreigners just to complement their staff in positions that weren't being addressed at the college level. With a lot of these jobs now going unfulfilled, especially at the highest level, like the technology and computerized skills and things of that nature. And then you have that technical school situation where that's in demand now even more so because those jobs are not being filled by qualified students who are not attending college but trade schools. And then the two-year colleges, which offer that in-between opportunity. But HBCUs seem to have been focusing on perhaps areas where they're not as competitive as they were when they first started out years ago. And things have evolved, of course, because a lot of them began as agriculture and mechanical schools, state-supported schools of that nature, where they did groom young students to have these kind of careers, if you want to call them. One thing that I noticed that this is a conversation, a debate that started back with Frederick W.E.D. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington between the intellectual side as opposed to more hands-on skill training that they were advocating back after slavery as a way to elevate the status of the new citizens of this country. But it seems we've come full circle because, again, those jobs and situations somehow got lost in the curriculums that used to be offered at a lot of our HBCUs.
Well,
one of the things that you're hitting on, we've had enough programs created down through the years to take us through what you just discussed, except our so-called HBCU leaders now don't understand. They have to reinvent the wheel because of some kind of educational background they may have achieved. But if you go back to, we had models, and you mentioned some historical things, we had model programs that would take care of that traded. And I always think of how the OIC was started in the Philadelphia area, Reverend Sullivan. They fought to get Tasty Freeze and Pepsi Cola to hire minorities, particularly blacks. And they would hire them, and eventually they would be dropping out. And they realized, and that's why OIC came about, to train. And they found out they were dropping out, not because they were lazy. They just couldn't do the work without some kind of training. And so OIC started the program of training these people for Tasty Freeze and Pepsi, and retention picked up. Well, those kind of programs were put aside after so many years, but we need to realize that these programs were created and they worked, and we need to adopt them rather than thinking that they're outdated or whatever, and add to what needs to upgrade them rather than doing away with them. And if you notice that student enrollment would be a lot better because we could change our focus and take the technical side and the trade side and educate people. But we haven't now, I'm noticing, that we're having so many conflicts in HBC that you call the institution and the personnel from the top down may not be there. And I don't understand all of that type of thing, that we can't keep good qualified people or hired people that could move these schools into new areas and adjustments, because that enrollment thing is better. And then I'm noticing, Ed, that on the athletic side, we have some schools that drop athletics. Now, athletic and sports have numbers, and we need to adjust our programs to have athletic programs. But what bothers me is everybody always picked the Cadillac model, the NCAA. Now, the criteria with the NCAA may sometimes seem to me is to keep certain kids out. And we need to focus on other national organizations. Now, the oldest national athletic association is called the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics, which we all belong to at first before the NCAA let us in. And the NAIA still exists, in spite of almost being run out of business by the NCAA. But the criteria for the NAIA is where many of us should have athletics to satisfy those numbers, because it only takes 2 out of 3 criteria for national eligibility. And, of course, one is finishing the top percentile of your class. The other is 350, if that number is still the same on the SAT. And then, of course, maintain a grade point average of 2.0 in all subjects. And see, nothing's on a scale or whatever. If you have 2 of those 3 I just mentioned, you can come in and participate on the national level with the NAIA. But many of our students have not researched or going back to the NAIA or even pursuing it because the NCAA is so dominant and popular. And plus, the NCAA has an advantage because of the amount of money it operates on to take care of expenses and stuff. And the NAIA, at some point, you might have to spend your own money to get to a championship. But the numbers in adding sport, I happen to be, if you mentioned the EIAC, which was members of the NAIA, and of course, bringing back football was very important to a school in Jacksonville, a private school called Edward Waters College. I spent some time in that Jacksonville, and of course, they brought back football. The enrollment doubled. And you can bring your programs down to where you can have athletics and bring those numbers. And there are programs. I got a program that I can introduce to a private school. They could bring in retired coaches that would work just during that sport with small stipends, would be happy to do it. And with small stipends, and when that sport is over, they're not obligated to pay a salary.
Absolutely.
So the key is that we got to utilize the whole community to maintain these schools now. But we get to the point sometimes where we are so conscious these days of degrees. And see, degrees does not mean that you're smart. And we got to start working smart. And we need to make sure that we look at the resources that are out there that are available to us through retired business people, retired military people with leadership abilities, and that type of thing. And then we can also, when we negotiate, offer honorary degrees to people that would spend money on your campus. You know, name something after somebody every now and then, a room or a building. An honorary degree to the HBCUs, I don't know, it seems like the attitude, you know, I got mine, you have to earn yours. But that ain't the way honorary degrees work.
I see.
It doesn't mean that you're going to go in a classroom and try to outdo a PhD. It doesn't mean that.
We have some situations that I'd just like to bring a point to is some of the smaller schools who are not on the level, say, of Division I HBCUs who perhaps are thriving more in the realm of their enrollment and engaging in some of the intellectual level curriculums and also into this new era of computerized technology. Like A&T has several programs that are highly rated, Florida A&M. But on the other hand, you have very impressive situations with schools like Claflin University that has really turned things around. They brought in a very...
They really have. They've done great.
And then you have Paul Quinn, Mike Sorrell down at Paul Quinn. What he's managed to do with that situation was really impressive. And he's getting, of course, a lot of accolades these days for doing that, and rightly so. The young man out of Harris Stowe, who's one of the youngest presidents at any institution, has managed to bring a visionary approach to that school, and they are working. So these should be templates from which others can draw from if they would sit in the same room, like you said, and, you know, and share some of the information and look to support each other, because as I see it, if one is suffering, that means that we all are under the same microscope, because that's the way it is in the media. You know, they never really separate any of us that said HBCUs are having problems. So I think that, like you said once before, years ago, that we can't go to D.C. with our hat in our hand without having a plan that can sell.
That hasn't
been the case lately. I mean, kind of pitiful that we have all these educated folks who don't seem to have that ability to bring a vision to a situation that needs a lot of help, a lot of upgrading, a lot of whatever. You have to use what you have and, you know, and then make that work. So at this point, what do you see as a viable way to bring these colleges and universities into a forum that they can sit and share information, which I think would be really valuable to some of the small struggling schools, for instance, like a Bennett College that's losing accreditation and, you know, Bethune-Cookman is in trouble, and it's really kind of hard to comprehend as long as they've been around how it's gone downhill in a lot of these situations.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, but it's very difficult. And it seemed like it would be easy for HBCUs because we all came from the same slave market and same community. We're one race of people that we can determine that our success is based on coming from underprivileged conditions. And when someone is successful and all, we need to praise that person and stop worrying about what their credentials are, if they have expertise. But we done cut ourselves off from the very people that we're supposed to serve, the underachiever. And it's very difficult because when you look at the situation, most of our historical HBCUs were built Black communities. And now most of the people who are recruited right around the Black colleges are wearing other school t-shirts and recruiting right around us. And we're not even touching those areas as much as some of the other schools. And so parents are tired of having to go through so much turmoil to get into a HBCU. I have a method of getting some results. I can call over there and say, I want to speak to Dr. So-and-so. And you go through the third degree, I'm paid free. I want to speak to Dr. So-and-so. And the secretary gives me, like I should have sent her a resume. I'll hang up and I'll call back and I'll make up a couple of things for you and associate. And so they'll put me through. And that should not be, because most of the people with money, a lot of times, that want to help them, HBCU. So public information is very important to historical Black college. So we got to help them lay the groundwork to be more negotiable when they go out to recruit or to solicit funds or whatever, rather than being on the lower end of the pole. Because anybody that gives you something, you owe them. And we don't need to put ourselves in that situation. As far as you mentioned the accreditations, I don't think that there's any reason why a school should lose its accreditation with all of the smart people that they have working there if they stay ahead of the game and not let these things slip up on them and they put themselves in a rush to solve solutions. You got to have a plan.
Unfortunately, we ran out of time limit out, but I know this is a conversation that we will continue to have, and we'll be adding other folks who have a lot of expertise and perhaps can add to the solution and offer to those who would be willing to come to the table and say, okay, let's join hands and figure out a way that we can elevate all of our schools, you know, regardless of the situation. We will be continuing this because we have a series of upcoming conversations dealing with the same issue, and it's an ongoing thing. So I do appreciate you taking the time to share some of your opinions and your observations with us, and we look forward to having more of these, and perhaps at some point this can be a forum that a lot of folks will join and we can see if we can help move the needle a little bit down the line. So thank you very much, Ken, for your time, and we appreciate it, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Ed, very much.
Okay, take care. As a closing, I'd just like to speak to the program that the foundation has initiated. Initially, it was the Free College Preparatory Assistance Program. Since then, we've had a chance to evaluate some of the things that people have brought to us concerning opportunities around colleges and the careers that a lot of folks who aren't fortunate enough to afford to go to a four-year college, that really has become the topic of the day. And we have taken this program and expanded it to include the Free Comprehensive Preparatory Assistance Program. It's called CPAP, sponsored by the foundation. And we're partnering with local communities, organizations, and schools to promote education opportunities for those students who may not want to go to college but need to perhaps gain some technical training. And perhaps a two-year college might be a better situation for them, working their way through there into a situation where they can afford to go to a four-year school. With the cost that's now being like the elephant in the room, a lot of folks are really emphasizing how this can be viable opportunities to still get an education and perhaps get into a lucrative situation where he can make a really good career out of it and a great salary. You know, these things are important to all of us because you're always working for it, some goals in your life. A lot of schools are teaming up with corporations who are offering some insight into their particular careers that they offer, and that's a good thing because more of this is beginning to accelerate, and we need to be aware of this. So we'll be talking more about this in the upcoming podcast that we will be sharing with you. So if anyone would like to comment or you need more information, you can reach us through social media. We are on Twitter and Instagram at HBCU4Life. And, of course, you can go to the website at bcsportsfoundation.com and leave a comment, or you can contact us directly. We're at ed@bcsportsfoundation.com. And tune in next week for our next episode. And we really enjoy having you join us every Thursday night at 7 p.m. and look forward to it. Thank you. ¶¶